Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 204, being recorded on the 15th of November, 2017, with special guest Adam Modlin. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me, I have Evan, and our special guest, Adam. Kale was trying to join us, but I think he's been having some technical issues. We'll see if he's able to jump in, but didn't want to keep our guests waiting much longer, so we said let's get started. And as usual, a lot of updates this week on the Azure space. Evan, I noticed you put a bunch of things in the show notes, as did I.
The first one, and this is, you know, we've been talking about this off and on over the last couple of months, right? And this is actually, I guess at this point, let's see. Today, Azure Virtual Machines and Azure Cloud Services, which we'll be talking about a little bit later in the show, will not be in the classic portal anymore. So you'll have to, you know, if you still have to use the classic portal for OS image stuff, right, use PowerShell. But for everything else, you're going to be in the new portal. And really, I don't know what else is left there.
Yeah.
We might not have turned off the portal itself, but I'm not sure what else you can do in there.
I think Active Directory was one of the last things in there, right? And that got
And they're going like end of the month or something. They're GA and are soon.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. That's an era gone by now.
Yeah. It is.
That's a good one. And then you know, there's a few other updates here, but the one that I wanted to jump in on is one that kind of we've been talking about for a while, which is the Azure API management. You recall we had some guests on the show a couple of times.
Yeah.
And such a great service. But the common peeve for me was that even the lowest cost, the developer edition was like something $50 US a month. And that kind of, if you have an MSDN subscription, that really eats into your budget there, you know.
Yeah.
So now they're coming out. They made an announcement. They're going to have this new lower basic tier, right? So that they haven't announced what the cost is, but it'll be less than $50, I'm assuming. So so that's going to be a big. I think that's something that's very exciting, that people can now, you know, more readily try out the API management service. They've also switched to a billing hourly billing rate instead of the daily billing rate, and Azure Active Directory integration is now available even in the standard pricing tier. Those are some of the updates over there. I noticed there's a SQL update in there. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I haven't looked at to see exactly what it means, but you know, it's a compute optimized setup for SQL data warehouse. So I assume underneath this, right, this is we're going to probably be, you know, putting it on some of the machines that are targeted for some of the high performance stuff. But it looks like we've got, you know, 5 times the computing power, and they said unlimited amount of columnar data, you know, so the column storage stuff, which, I mean, I thought that stuff was, I don't know what the cap was before, it was pretty large, but I kind of want to see somebody's workload if they're pushing that much stuff in, that much column store data that they need an unlimited amount that they're going towards that SKU.
Yeah.
Might be something we have to dig around and see who's doing that.
That's a good one. The other thing that the AKS has been the buzz these days, right? The Azure Kubernetes service.
I got to ask a question. So there's Azure, there's AKS, the Kubernetes, but then there's the Azure Container Service, which I've seen AKS as well.
Right. So ACS is Azure. Was what we used to have. Our offering for containers was ACS. It still is. It's not like
okay.
It's gone away, right? ACS is an offering that we have. But that what ACS does is it gives you a choice of what kind of container you want, right? You can have a choice of Mesosphere, DCOS, or Kubernetes. I think
okay.
Docker Swarm may have been an option too there. But you just pick which one you want, and then what it would do is it would deploy a cluster for you, you know, with that particular software already pre-installed. But once it's deployed, the cluster was yours to keep and manage. That was the
Right.
thing. So, although it was a service, the service was basically just to deploy the cluster for you. Then, the headache's on you to kind of keep it up to date, patch it, and whatnot. The AKS takes that a step further. Not only have they kind of standardized on Kubernetes, being that that's becoming the most popular of the orchestrators out there these days, but they also made it a managed service, which is you don't have to worry about the nodes and the cluster and everything. All you're worried about is that, hey, there is an AKS service that I have out there, and I can deploy any number of containers I want to it.
Okay. So
And
we have AKS on top of ACS then
I
is
don't know.
what I'm
I
asking.
don't know if it uses ACS under the covers. It possibly might. I'm
Okay.
actually not aware of that. But that's a good thought. But that's the difference as far as I know it.
Gotcha. Okay.
Adam, anything you've heard on those two things? On ACS, AKS?
No, I'm kind of in the same boat as Evan. I thought that they're a little bit confusing to me what the differentiator is. I was actually just looking at that for this call.
And they have ACI on top of all that, right? Which we talked about, which is the Azure Container Instance, which is what they announced at Ignite, I think. And that is where you just need a single instance of a container running. I just need an Nginx server running immediately. I can just say, start one up for me. That's not a scenario where you would have multiple containers talking to each other. It's a single container. That's all you have, and that's all you care about. And you can just run it for 10 seconds and shut it down, and they'll bill you for, I think it's per minute, so at most you'll pay for 1 minute. Whereas AKS is a full-fledged Kubernetes cluster.
Hey guys, sorry I couldn't join there earlier. I was having some
Hey,
audio issues.
Kale, welcome. Just in time. So we're just talking about some of the updates and having a little bit of discussion between AKS, ACS, and ACI. But the update that's up for this week and related to that topic is the Azure Container Registry service, which is kind of ties into these all these container offerings that we have. Eventually, you need some place to store your images that can be used. To that these services can use to pull from when you do deploy a container to one of them, and that's what the Azure Container Registry service is. And now they've made it they've improved on it. They've introduced geo-replication in preview, and it's now like fully managed service. So that's something that has been closely watched. I know my customer has been looking for this very closely because you can now confine it to a specific region and things like that. What else? Let's see. There's got some new VMs and stuff like that.
Yeah, the F series or FV2 series went GA, and then there's more G series around the world. I still think the fact that you can say that we have 72 virtual CPUs at 144 gigs of RAM, and that's not even the biggest, right? We've got the SAP HANA type stuff that's out there that's even I think even larger than that. Those are just massive machines, but those are generally available. And then we've got G series in another couple of regions. I don't remember what regions they were, but we're just expanding access to those.
Right. And these have the latest Skylake processors, so they're really advanced. Let's see. Another quick one I want to talk about was the Azure Batch, right? I think we kind of briefly talked about it in the past. So Azure Batch was a system where you could do batch compute, run special batch compute programs. But they had this introduced this low priority version of it, where you can say I have low I want to use low priority VMs in Azure Batch, and that would be much cheaper. Obviously, you may not get it immediately, right? It might be a delay before your job gets invoked, because it has to use whatever available resources are there. You're kind of low on the priority list, but you get a good cost savings. And now that facility, which was in preview before, has now become generally available. What else? Bing search. There's been a lot of advancements in that area. They're making that better. So we'll put links to that in the show notes. I think that's a good roundup, right?
Yep.
Okay, so let's turn the mic over to our special guest, Adam Modlin. Adam, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Please introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us, what you do in Azure these days.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the invitation. So I'm a developer consultant here at Microsoft. I work with largely with the public sector, and I've been working with Azure, I guess, probably for about a year and a half with kind of a variety of different Azure technologies, cloud services, Azure SQL, Service Bus are kind of the major ones. But, you know, really it's all sorts of, you know, web roles, worker roles, front-end development, back-end development, really whatever we've got going on there, and we just put it all in Azure.
Yeah, and I know we were talking about this earlier today, I just suddenly remembered, I said, you know, I think we take for granted, right, that cloud services exist in Azure, and actually I had to go back and look at our podcast history. I think we last spoke about cloud services in episode number 2. Right, which was in 2013. So a long time ago is when we dedicated a whole episode to cloud services. And I think cloud services is how Azure started, right? Evan, I think you have a lot of history behind this.
I was around for when the cloud services first launched, and they were new and cool. Not that they're not cool now, but they were the only thing we had. And remember, if those of you that are listening, right, Microsoft started with PaaS, like straight PaaS. And I think the vision was right, right? We said that's the vision. People don't want to manage OS. They don't want to manage all they really want to do is manage their application. Mm-hmm. And then the market looked at us straight in the face and said, yeah, we like that idea, but if we have existing workloads, we can't do that. We don't want to have to recode everything. And, you know, we're not quite ready to give up full total control. Mm-hmm. To you yet. We still want to be able to put our hands on the software layer of these machines. So that's when IaaS came out. But yeah, I mean, PaaS was, I mean, I remember when it was, I did a demo where I deployed some code talking, you know, in a PaaS instance, talking to Azure SQL DB. And I, like, on the fly while I was talking, I scaled it up to like 150 instances. It was like, wow, that's amazing. I can't believe we could do that, right?
That's pretty great.
And it only took like 30 minutes to do all 150. So, but just the fact that you could do it was amazing back then.
That's true. Yeah. And, so I'm just curious. I mean, Adam, you know, how did your public sector customer, how do they even get onto a cloud system? I always like to ask people who are on cloud services, like, what got them there? Was it the fact that that was the only thing available when they got on, or did they make a choice to get onto it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably had something to do with it. I'm not sure exactly how many years they've been using cloud services, but probably since around when they GA'd and were made available. They kind of wanted to move away from the heavyweight on-premise IaaS hosting, you know, in Hyper-V or in VMware, but they didn't want to lose control of everything. So it was kind of a nice compromise for them where they could still have a little bit of control over the OS, not have to manage everything in there. That was just very appealing to them, I think.
Yeah, and you mentioned that they're using both the kinds of roles in there, right? The web roles and the worker roles.
Yep.
Are these like just traditional web services, web apps kind of things, or like what kind of operating system? Like, are they using? I mean, .NET. Like, what kind of frameworks are they?
Yeah, for the web roles, I mean, they're all pretty much running web API applications as web roles. And we're putting out RESTful services, and those generally are just consumed internally by our projects and our teams. And those work great. You know, it's very easy to scale them. You can scale them based on performance counters that are, you know, easily available and seem to work very nicely. The worker roles we tend to have a little bit more complicated, where we've kind of built out a microservice architecture using cloud services. And we use Service Bus as our messaging framework in a framework called nService Bus that kind of gives you a messaging framework agnostic way to create a worker role in a cloud service. So it works really well and it scales really well since it's a microservice architecture. We can just bump up the number of instances and it works faster. It's pretty great.
That it's interesting to hear you talk about that because, you know, when cloud services came out, microservices didn't exist. So what that really to me says is this, the cloud service concept and the technology has some staying power because you're able to leverage it with kind of new paradigms and new ways of designing applications.
Absolutely. And we've even done some pretty cool stuff recently, kind of tying the cloud services into Azure functions. Like, for example, we wanted to scale our cloud services based on queue length in Service Bus. But unfortunately, there's not an easy way for you to just turn on Application Insights to Service Bus. So we were able to write some scheduled Azure functions that posted metrics to Application Insights and then tied the auto scale settings of our instance to that metric. And then, you know, we were scaling based on Service Bus size. So I think that feature, you know, tied in with functions, you could pretty much auto scale on anything you wanted.
That's a cool tip.
Yeah. So go back. So you use functions to pull the metric and then dump the metric into Application Insights, and then you point the cloud service scaling logic at the Application Insights metric.
Yeah, you can. Okay. Exactly. You just set the metric source to that Application Insights account. And you can pick your specific metric, and it was really that easy.
Nice.
Yeah, wow. I'm gonna have to do this with my customer. We're facing a similar dilemma. So it just so happens that my customer is also very heavily invested in cloud services. I think they were one of the early. They got on pretty early on it when Azure first started. So that's how they got on. But I'm curious, what's been their experience with cloud services? Because, one of the things is it's been around for such a long time, but they've kept up with the version of .NET, right? Their .NET version is pretty up to date. The operating system gets updated regularly. So, they managed to keep that cloud service environment very current. I'm just wondering, what has been their experience with it so far, from the customer side as well as from the development side?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as the customer goes, they're pretty much happy as long as their application is running and running quickly, right? And when it goes down, I don't think they really care if it's because it was a cloud service or it was because we didn't scale right or anything like that. So they're, as far as we can tell, they're very happy with it. From a developer perspective, I think we're happy with it, but we would like maybe to get rid of some of the flexibility that we don't necessarily need.
Hmm.
So we do, for something like a web API application, there's now different things out there that you can use, like Azure API apps, to put your API out there and not necessarily have to have the heavyweight cloud service virtual machine out there. So,
right.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think, as with any... I hesitate to say aging technology, but as with any technology that's been around for a while, there's always concern of, is this going to be the way forward? Is that going to be supported, new features developed and stuff? But, as far as we can tell, it seems to be right up there as a first-class citizen.
I was wondering, the same thing. I was wondering, as app services came about, and you said it was an API app, was there something, because in the past it seemed like the compelling reason to use cloud services as opposed to an app service was, I need to install something on the machine or I need to do something, and you did a little startup test. Is that still you have requirements like that? Or
and that's exactly what it is. We have some unique requirements there regarding certificates and different logging frameworks that actually need file system access. And unfortunately, until we resolve those issues, we probably can't use something like web apps or API apps.
Yeah, and that's just one of the same things in my customer, which is a financial services customer. They, for regulatory reasons, they need to put a lot of things on those boxes, and cloud services gives them that flexibility.
The other thing I'm interested in, maybe even Sajid too, on the... at least financial services is pretty heavy in this, but one of the things I ran into a long time ago with this and wondering if you guys had the same experience was, the operating system that gets deployed or maintained on these cloud service instances, they were like, yeah, so this is cool as long as we can replay this 7 years later. I was like, I'm not sure we can do that. Like, because you know, that thing revs all the time, and you can pin it, right? Like, you can pin it to a specific OS.
But only for so long, though, right? Eventually.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you guys have run into that as well with the cloud service model of it.
We haven't really been impacted by that. We don't have any requirements regarding the specific operating system. For us, it's really we have a large team of service reliability engineers within some of the product groups that we work with that have specific logging requirements that need file system access. So that's really the big driving factor, I think. That and, you know, it's one of those things where it's sort of an inertia type thing. There's a lot of experience with it and not much experience with some of the app services. So it can be tough.
They're just comfortable with that right now. They have all the information they need. They get everything they need from there.
Exactly. And they're slowly moving towards things. You know, there's a lot of alternatives out there like Azure Functions, API apps, web apps, or Service Fabric. I know that we want to potentially move some of our worker roles into Service Fabric just because we don't really need the full, you know, operating system running there. But,
right.
You know, there's no, it's not like it's not working for us. You know, it works great.
So, you know, I have like two. Okay, but before I get to the two questions I have for you, I wanted to just answer Kale. He asked about our experience with the operating system, and you know, for the most part, I think I don't think you're forced to move from one OS version to the other, but within the OS version, they keep updating, putting patches, right? And you can only hold those patches on for so long. Eventually, they'll forcefully update you. And for the most part, those have not caused any problems for us, you know, for our customer. Like, I've not heard of an issue where an OS patch has broken an application, for example.
Yeah, I don't think that this particular case I was thinking of was... you know, it was almost like a legal thing where basically if someone came back up to 7 years later and said, I want to see exactly what the system looked like
on this date seven years ago.
And you said, well, the operating system won't be exact, but it's a web app. Like, why does the operating system matter? You know, so there was, it's kind of a legal thing. But I just wondered if you guys had hit the same.
Oh, that's interesting. I've heard about the, you know, we have to preserve the logs for up to 7 years, all the detail logs. But yep. Interesting about the actual operating system. So you're saying, like, can you take like a snapshot or an image of it,
right?
And save it off somewhere. Yep. I don't know. I've not. Adam, have you come across that?
I've not. No. That's an interesting scenario though, because I wonder how you would do that, even in a straight IaaS solution. That would be very difficult.
Yep. So Adam, you know what I wanted to ask you was. What about the reliability of the cloud services? I know you said, I think you alluded to the fact that it may go down. It has gone down sometimes. Has that been because, you know, it's got this concept of the update domains and the fault domains and whatnot. Have you had an outage that took out the entire service?
No, you know, I was just thinking about that. I don't think we have. We generally run every single cloud service with multiple instances, just to make sure that we're not going to have updates take us down or have a, you know, one specific fault domain go down and take us down. I don't know that we've ever had a cloud service go down.
Okay.
Typically, if we've had other issues, it may have been related to, you know, Azure SQL or right. us. You know,
some dependent service that's like gone that. Down. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's generally not the cloud service. One thing that has been difficult for us is the limitation on the number of cloud services you can have per subscription.
Right.
I can't remember the exact number, but that's been a big pain point for us where our admin team doesn't want to manage multiple subscriptions and just, you know, keep adding in new subscriptions when we need to add cloud services. So that can be difficult.
What's kind of the plan long term then here? I mean, is it to start, like, you know, if you were to write new code today, like a new microservice, that fits into your ecosystem, are you still deploying new stuff as cloud services, or have you started, you know, kind of deploying new as, you know, maybe web apps or skill sets or something? But you're obviously not going to tear down the old stuff, but is the plan to stay on that? I mean, forever is a long time, but
yeah.
But kind of what are you thinking about from a migration perspective?
Yeah, so I think we are planning on moving some workloads to different app services. I know that we have I believe, at least one Angular 4, or maybe it's Angular 5 now, app running as a web app.
Yep.
And that's been great because thankfully we don't have those logging needs just for that front end. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern. We do have some people on our team investigating Service Fabric.
Right, that would be the other one, yeah.
Yeah, I think probably for us having this kind of architecture that we do, Service Fabric or Azure Container Service or Kubernetes, anything like that, that would probably be a really good candidate for us. But I would imagine we'll probably always have some cloud services.
It's interesting because, you know, I'm thinking about my days in support where, you know, we get these calls and people are like, yeah, I have this hardware, this one computer that sits in a corner and it runs this, you know, mission critical app and don't touch it, right? Like right. Nobody's allowed to touch it. And then it goes down one day and then you run around trying to fix it. You guys still have to maintain your code.
Right.
But even though cloud services are not the newest, shiniest object out there, they still work fine. And because you don't have to worry about any of the infrastructure underneath you, all you have to focus on is your code versus, you know, some of these on-premises folks, they're worrying about, you know, half the time the machine's so old they can't even virtualize it.
Right.
So they're sitting exactly. there stuck with that. And again, even though you're on some older technology, it's a much smaller scope that you have to kind of keep and manage. So even then, I guess where I'm going is it's still easier to manage than if they were trying to do this on premises.
Right. And I think that was their initial motivation to move to it. And they're very I think they're very happy with the level of maintenance they have now. It's really just a matter of can we keep up with technology? Because, you know, I've had customers where you go in there and they say, hey, we need to use this new feature of .NET and we're on .NET 2.0 and you look at the calendar and it's 2017 and you know. So we would like to avoid a situation like that and stay ahead of it. So we've been investigating things, you know, move to .NET Core inside of our cloud services. You know, really anything we can do to make sure that we're staying current and supportable.
I mean, I've always said that, you know, that, and we've talked about it on the show before, the guys know this, that, you know, I think cloud services, the traditional PaaS services, they have been the best kind of PaaS you can find on any cloud.
Absolutely.
On any cloud, you know. You can look at Google, Amazon, IBM, whoever, I don't care. You'll never find a PaaS service as robust and as well designed as the cloud services. It gives you the flexibility that you want. You just explained that. But at the same time, if you don't want that flexibility, you can be completely hands-off. It supports various languages, right? Yeah, I mean, we run Java apps on that thing, and it runs fine, right? Doesn't really care that it's running Java apps. You can run .NET Core, as you mentioned, just regular .NET, of course. You have all these options. And you get this complete reliability they offer you, right? With the update domains, the vault domains, it's a complete managed service. The only one thing I think, you know, if there's one thing that's going to eventually get in the way, is the fact that cloud services is still stuck in ASM land, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It still runs in that RDFE environment. It doesn't support ARM yet. That's the only thing that's, you know, eventually going to be a stumbling block, the way I see it.
Yeah, I mean, they're even easier to support. I don't know if you guys have had to do this, but I mean, you can because you can RDP into your cloud services. You know, if you want to do things like network traces, server side fiddlers, right. All that stuff, you can get versus, you know, when you talk about, you know, probably the closest analogy that I have the most experience with to cloud services is web roles. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, is web apps, mm-hmm. right? Again, similar kind of just point it, deploy it, and then you're done. But, you know, web apps have a lot more restrictions around, you know, you don't have full control of the machine. You have a good bit of control, and we're exposing more and more all the time. But, you know, if I want to get a network trace on the server side of a web app, that's a lot harder to do, even for me internally, versus a cloud service. Oh, yeah, you know, enable RDP, remote in, and install whatever I want to install. And then when I'm done with it, yeah, I get rid of this instance. Let me, you know, I got my brother one sitting next to it, and anything I installed or any changes I made, gone. Don't have to worry about it. So I've always thought they were great to work with personally.
Yeah, and I think especially nowadays when there's tons of companies and customers that are finally kind of getting bit by the cloud bug and really want to move into the cloud, it
it makes it a really easy transition to move from just your on-premises virtualization to into a cloud service. You know, your team, they understand they can remote desktop into a VM and see what's going on.
Right.
That's been really helpful.
But that's I agree that that's what they should be doing, but most of them look at the new shiny toys, right, when they get to the cloud, and they're like, we put it on containers, we put it on app service, service fabric. Well, cloud service is literally the last thing they look at, and that really should be the first thing they look at, if you ask me.
I'm interested, you guys, when using these, because it's been a long time since I used cloud services. And I'm wondering, I remember, like Evan said before, even early on, when we did deployments with these, I mean, you were talking 10 minutes. I'm just wondering if, is that still the experience there? Like, I know you build your package and you deploy it. Similar kind of turnaround time, still around like 5 to 10 minutes, or what's the experience you guys have had?
Yeah, I mean, in my experience, it's, you know, it's definitely not the fastest thing out there as far as deployments or scaling goes.
But that's because you have custom startup tasks. That's what puts a lot of delay into the system. Without the startup tasks, it is within a couple of minutes, I think.
I can't believe we're sitting here saying, "Oh, it's really slow. It's a couple of minutes to deploy."
Right.
I need seconds, man. I don't know.
Well, I remember this is a couple of minutes, like, you know, in deploying like a 6-7 instance cluster, right?
Yeah, exactly. I know. Yeah.
And it's actually even easier to deploy now probably than it was 4 years ago, because I know that we've been working with, you know, a huge library of PowerShell scripts to do deployments for our cloud services, and I think probably a lot of people were doing that. Now you can tie it directly into Visual Studio Online release management, which is pretty great. I mean, we do that with some of our, you know, actually probably a lot of our cloud services are all deployed through a one button press, and we don't even worry about it anymore.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Now, this is great. I'm so glad we got a chance to revisit cloud services with Adam. I appreciate you sharing your experience there.
We'll have to come back at episode, 409 or something like that, and see if cloud services are still hanging out.
It will still be there, believe me.
We'll be able in quantum by the end of the week.
Well, any more questions for Adam before we let him go?
No, this is great. Glad to hear that somebody's out there still kind of using these and enjoying the benefits.
Yeah.
Adam, anything you want to share before we sign off?
No, I think this was great. I appreciate the invitation to be on the show.
All right, great. Again, thanks for sharing your insights, and we look forward to getting you on again sometime.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.